I'm Megan Murphy, host of The Same Drugs. I'm here to have conversations. Real, honest, authentic conversations. The kind we aren't supposed to have anymore. I interview anyone I find interesting, from left to right to everywhere in between. I work independently in order to have the freedom to say what I believe and speak to whoever I want. Staying independent has allowed me to speak freely and to tell the truth, no matter how unpopular, for many years now, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. We have seen over the last few years how deeply compromised big media is, and how willing mainstream journalists are to twist facts and to hide the truth to sell a narrative. I opted out of mainstream media and a traditional career path for a reason. I want to come to my own conclusions and not be compromised by financial, political, or institutional limitations. I refuse to trade my integrity or my free speech for a paycheck. But that means I need your help. I rely on donors and patrons, so individuals, to support my work so that I can continue to do what I do. Some of you may have noticed that I am no longer posting full video versions of these interviews on YouTube. This is because YouTube dings my channel, gives me warnings, demonetizes me, and in fact has fully shadow banned me on the platform for talking about things that I tend to talk about, including gender identity ideology, the COVID mandates, Justin Trudeau's policies in general, internet censorship, and various other views, questions, issues deemed unspeakable by social media giants like YouTube and Meta, which has also shadow banned me. As a result, I decided to stop providing YouTube with all of my content when the only result is punishment and erasure. So if you do appreciate the kinds of conversations we're having at The Same Drugs, wish to support my work and access full video versions of interviews, a great way to do that is by becoming a subscriber on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Megan Murphy, or on Substack, where subscribers can be sure not to miss a single episode. Again, can access subscriber-only video content, engage with the comment section, as well as subscriber-only chats and AMAs, and you can keep up with my writing there as well. Just head over to www.meganmurphy.ca to subscribe. You can, of course, also follow the podcast on Spotify and support the podcast directly there by clicking the support button on the Same Drugs podcast page. And finally, don't drink the Kool-Aid. You may have seen me in a very stylish shirt with a very timeless message online, and you can get your very own at the Same Drugs merch store on Teespring. That's at thesamedrugs.creator-spring.com. Thank you so much for supporting conversations outside the algorithm. Today on the show, I am speaking with Gord McGill, a Canadian trucker who is here to tell us the real story about the Coots 4 and what happened during the Freedom Convoy that ended the mandates in Canada and saved us all from Justin Trudeau's authoritarianism. I would love it if you could just tell me a little bit about yourself. You are a trucker, is that correct?
I got laid off in July, but yeah, for the most part, I've been trucking my entire life. My dad was a trucker, both my uncles were truckers, my grandpa was a trucker. That's pretty much 98% of what I've done with myself.
So did you choose this as a career path basically because of family connections, or is there some other reason? How did you get into this?
That was part of it. It suits my personality. I'm quite happy with my own company. And when I was a kid, I used to ride my bike all over the place. I grew up in Southern Ontario, and I'd ride my bike to Hamilton, ride my bike to Niagara Falls. I've just always been wandering around.
Yeah.
And, trucking was just an extension of that. I rode with my dad when I was a kid, and I just sort of idolized my old man and the sort of ability to travel far distances on someone else's dime and have some adventure.
Yeah, Definitely. I can see the appeal. I love driving. I have a truck also, although I suspect it's not quite as big as
Did you bring
mine's
it
a
with
Ford
you?
F-150.
Right, did you bring it with you from BC to Mexico?
No, I'd left it. It's over in BC still, so I only get to use it when I'm back. But I was back for a few months this year for the first time in a while, so
Your
I was really
pickup
happy.
is bigger than mine. I have a Toyota Tacoma.
Ah, pathetic. It's a great truck. I love driving it. I love road trips. I love driving alone in my truck and like singing songs. It's one of my favorite things to do. And in fact, before, when I was still in Vancouver during the pandemic, I'm using air quotes. You missed them, which is what I
Yes, I
meant.
see that. Scamdemic. Yep, carry on.
So when I was still in Vancouver before I abandoned Canada and we were on lockdown, one of the things that I was doing to sort of stay sane was to go out for drives in my truck and listen to music, and it made me feel
Yeah,
happy
so
momentarily.
there's this philosopher guy who I'm a really big fan of, and your listeners should be too. Given the sort of people I'm assuming listen to your show from what I know of it. His name is Matthew B. Crawford. He's written a number of books, Shop Classes, Soulcraft, The World Beyond Your Head, and Why We Drive. And one of the points he made in the book, Why We Drive, is that one of the pushes for automating cars and trucks is not, they talk a lot of nonsense about, safety and humans are bad drivers and they discount human experience, but they actually want to capture that little bit of time to yourself, right? So, like, if you're at work or you're walking down the street, you have like a screen, your laptop in front of you, your phone, driving, you are paying attention to the road, right? And you're listening to a podcast or a radio or silence or having a conversation with a passenger. That's your time. That's your mental time. And advertisers want to get it. They're like, they can't get enough of you. But if they get you while you're driving, and what better way to do that than to relieve you of the duties of actually operating the vehicle? So this is part of the impetus behind automating away your time alone.
That's interesting because I've wondered what kind of crazy person would want to give up their driving experience to a robot. Partly because I find it terrifying, but also again because I enjoy it so much. I mean, I already don't I hate driving new cars because it feels like you're not driving anything. Like
Oh, they're
it feels like you're
terrible.
not doing anything. And
Yeah,
I'm like, what is
no,
the fun of this?
one of the reasons I like my Tacoma so much is because it's 25 years old and it's got a stick shift.
Oh, okay, I don't know how to drive a stick shift, but I have a 95, so my truck is pretty old too. But yeah, every time I get into a new car, I'm like, ah! This may as well be driving itself. I feel so vulnerable. But yeah, that's interesting. I find it such like a sort of calming, meditative thing, and I imagine that maybe you do too as a trucker.
Oh yeah. No, I'm very happy in my own company and it zens me out, There's a few things in life that zen me out. Driving, doing dishes, hiking, and chopping firewood.
Okay, I'm gonna have to start chopping firewood then. I do the other things. That's
Well,
the one that's missing.
you live in
Can you
Mexico
imagine
now.
if I found I don't think that there are any houses in all of where I live in Mexico that have a fireplace. So I'll have to do that in BC. On the island, my dad chops firewood, and we do have a wood stove over there. I just have never bothered trying because he always does it. Maybe I'll take that up. But anyway, I was so inspired and thrilled to see, first of all, that Canadians were pushing back finally. Not just, this was, I'm talking about the Freedom Convoy, the trucker convoy, of course, but pushing back against the mandates, the lockdowns. But just pushing back in general, because Canadians are so passive, and
We are the docile masses.
Yeah, we trust the government and we think that everything's going to be okay and that if the government's doing something, it's probably for a good reason. They're here to help after all. And I think that many of us learned that that was not true. Some of us probably already knew that that wasn't true, but I think that those of us who did not really were woken up by the whole pandemic situation. But it wasn't just that it was that Canadians were pushing back for me. It was that I felt like this was like a real working class revolution. You know, the fact that it was the truckers that saved Canada and really that saved the U.S. as well. The U.S. followed suit when Canada ended the lockdowns and the mandates.
I have some theories on that.
Okay, tell us.
I don't know how many of your listeners sort of understand the intricacies of various and sundry sort of labor issues, but truckers have been on the leading edge of being guinea pigs by the surveillance state. Sort of Qualcomms and monitoring and surveillance technology started being imposed on certain trucking companies in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And then the sort of tender mercies of the regulatory state have been inflicted on us all the time. And, you know, ELD mandates, drug screening, there's just been all these various regulations imposed on truckers. So it didn't surprise me in the least that the Freedom Convoy was truckers, because it was sort of the straw that broke the 18-wheeled camel's back. You know, the mandates that Trudeau imposed at such a late hour as January 2022, when everybody knew that the vaccine did not prevent transmission and truckers had already worked their asses off for the previous 2 years through the pandemic, making sure everybody got their stuff while the email job case hid at home in their pajamas. And we kept on working in our very solitary lifestyle, not talking to anybody, being denied access to rest areas and truck stops that were closed. You would show up at a distribution center or a factory and they would tell you to stay in your truck and not even do the paperwork. Just stay in your truck. We don't want to see you. Nobody was ever told about this. Trudeau never studied it. There was never any science. It was just like, you guys are going to take this vaccine mandate or else, despite all the evidence showing that he was basically attacking a group of people who like needed it the least.
Do you know much about how the truckers organized?
I know a little bit. I mean, you know, full disclosure, I am not part of the Freedom Convoy. I was not part of its organization. I'm merely expressing solidarity and writing about it and, you know, much like anybody else, just paying attention to things. But, you know, I am a trucker and I've written extensively on this. And the Freedom Convoy was the definition of a sort of spontaneously organized, decentralized protest movement, right? The media tried to say it was all financed by Trump supporters from the U.S.
Or Russia.
It was Russia. Yeah, I remember that thing from the CBC too, which was ridiculous. And there was just all these spurious allegations. But literally, the Freedom Convoy, it took advantage of the distributed ability of using the internet to organize things, and like the sort of, you know, it kind of just went viral. The idea itself was just started by like a couple of truckers on TikTok, and then other people got in on it, and all the different convoys were organized by different people. The Ottawa people didn't have any association with the Windsor people or the Coots people or anyone that came from the East Coast. It just sort of happened on its own. It was totally decentralized and totally spontaneous.
Yeah, that was my impression as well. Although, you know, I didn't really know anything about it until it happened. The difference between what I was seeing, what the impression that I got immediately by response to my my feelings around the Trekkers, which were, you know, like being thrilled and again inspired, they were so different than what the news media in Canada were reporting, much of the news media in the US were reporting. And
oh, no, the media's job is to invert reality. It's not to report the truth. I mean, you of all people should know this by now, right?
I've begun to learn this, yes. And I've noticed that what I read in the media is not what's true ever.
I mean, almost this is ever. How I found myself in the position I'm in, right? Like, I, you know, I much like yourself, I left Canada a long time ago, mostly because I got married to an American. And I went home to express solidarity with my fellow truckers and with my fellow Canadians, given everything that had happened under the sort of venal and vindictive COVID regime of Justin Trudeau and the rest of the sort of technocratic administrative managerial state that runs Canada. And I went to Ottawa and I hung out for that first weekend and spoke with all kinds of people, ran into old friends who'd parked their trucks on Wellington Street and did the thing. And then I had to come back to the States to like look after my wife and my kids. And I just saw that the media in Canada went into overdrive lying about everything. So I spoke up about it on Twitter. I mean, that's the one social media I had was Twitter. I posted a bunch of videos from Ottawa. And some people had sort of like recognized my name from like blogging on the trucking industry itself, like not really political stuff, just trucking, right? I'd written on it in a couple of places before, and some people remembered that and were like, hey, what do you think about the Freedom Convoy? And I was invited to write at Newsweek and Unheard and a few places, and I basically relayed what I saw, which was that the Canadian people had enough, right? One of the things I first discovered when I went to Ottawa was that it wasn't even about the truckers. Like immediately, this was about something so much deeper. There was the Canadian soul had been stabbed in a way, and the truckers coming to Ottawa and all the other places in Canada was like this. It was just this like expression of, you know, relief that someone was finally doing something about the damage that had been inflicted on Canadian society, you know, like the acid that had been poured on all of these social and communal bonds that take years and decades to develop. And the government just like destroyed them like this over a very marginally effective virus that, you know, most people have a pretty good chance of surviving. And everyone was just like, finally, 2 years of this nightmare is over because of these guys in their rigs. They're finally going to take it to Trudeau. That's what I saw.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of Canadians were, I mean, what was so interesting and so effective about the Freedom Convoy and those protests were that they genuinely were peaceful, joyful protests, and they did involve Canadians connecting and community and support for one another and love for one another, and they were family friendly, and it was very amusing. It was very maddening, but it was also amusing to see the way that the media and progressives, you know, a lot of my progressive friends back in Vancouver were on board with this narrative as well, trying to spin something completely different, which was that these people were white supremacists and they were Nazis and they were dangerous and they were violent and they, you know,
people, and all of that has been in it's ever since been proven not true. The receipts are there.
Right. What can you talk a little bit about that? Maybe for those who are still buying into those, like there's a Confederate flag and there was like a Nazi flag. Yeah, like, what was all that?
So the Nazi flag guy has never been found. So that means CSIS, the Canadian Security and Intelligence Services, are either really bad at their jobs or the guy with the flag was one of their own. Take your pick. Right. the two rebel flag guys, the one rebel flag guy got chased away from in front of Parliament. There's video of this being accosted by the protesters, being told to get lost. And then the other guy with the rebel flag on his truck showed up at the POEC and said, "Hi, that was me. I'm a contractor. And to me, it's just a symbol of being a rebel." And like, it was a sign of solidarity. It had nothing to do with like racism or anything. But, you know, the media don't want that. They want their own narrative. And, you know, the truckers were accused of lighting an apartment building on fire. The Ottawa police said, no, those people had nothing to do with that. There was an accusation that like they'd robbed some soup kitchen or whatever. That was also BS. The truckers like set up their own kitchens. Just everything about it was BS. And if anybody paid any attention to the Public Order Emergency Commission and all the testimony that flowed from that, they would have saw that. But like, you know, the media picks and chooses what they report on, right? Like, lying by omission is a thing. And the Canadian media did a real good job at lying by omission about all the stuff they said at the beginning that turned out later to be not true.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the CBC has for many years now gotten away with super biased reporting, essentially by only speaking to people who will back up exactly the narrative that they want to present and refusing to speak to anybody who challenges that narrative.
Right. I mean, at this stage of the game, given everything I've seen in the last couple of years, CBC Canadians are only like one step away from being members of the Stasi. Like, for real. You know, no, if, I mean, one of the reasons you got to me was because I've been also reporting on these guys in Alberta that are still in remand. It's kind of like purgatory jail thing because they got picked up in Coots over a bunch of charges that are ridiculous. And the media aren't even talking about it at all.
Right? Yeah, I mean, that was the reason that I came across you is exactly because of that, because I was listening to Trish Wood's podcast and she
interviewed Trish,
friend of the podcast, friend of Gord. She's great. And you were talking about the Coots 4, and I had never heard of the Coots 4 before. And
color me surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wonder how many people have. And it's, the story is really appalling, I would say. Like, I was pretty shocked when I listened to your interview. And when I started reading about the Coots 4 in preparation for this interview, what I read was predictable, I suppose. But I read what Wikipedia had written up about the Coots 4.
There's very little to find, which is the problem. Well, one of the problems.
Yeah, but and what I did find was, let me actually read you what I found on Wikipedia. According to police, on February 10th, I mean, I know just as well as you do that what Wikipedia is and that it can't
carry
be trusted
on,
as
carry
a
on, I'm ready.
But I do find it interesting to see what Wikipedia has come up with. according to police, on February 10th, protester Anthony Olenek, I don't know if I've said his name properly, informed two undercover female police officers that he was expecting a delivery, which the officers understood to be a bag of firearms. Police officers stated that they observed Olenek, Carbert, and Jerry Morin receiving a package. So before we get into this, actually, just for those listening, I'll just explain that the Freedom Convoy came to Coots, Alberta in January 2022 and blockaded the border to the U.S. And shortly thereafter, in February, four men were arrested separately by the RCMP and charged with conspiracy. I think they were charged with other things as well, but one of the things they were charged with was conspiracy to commit murder of police officers.
And they were four of 13 people arrested. Everyone seems to forget that there was a number of arrests. And, you know what? So one of the reasons that the media says, well, we can't talk about this is because of a publication ban on certain information to obtain, which is his legal term, and certain aspects of the case. You're allowed to talk about the case. You're allowed to ask questions about what's going on around it. There's just certain details about it. And the media at the beginning of this, before the defense counsel asked for this publication ban, were very happy to discuss all of these allegations by the RCMP. One of the things that you'll find if you actually go into the legal documentation is that all of the testimony from RCMP agents is all qualified. We believe, we think, like, it's all qualified. There's no actual evidence. A lot of the stuff they said, there was no wire. So, like, this is all taken from notes from undercover officers. They didn't actually get recordings of a lot of the things that are alleged to have said. And then, you know, they said, you know, well, these guys were expecting a delivery of all these guns. Well, actually, what they're doing is they're interpreting deliveries of food and supplies for everybody that was at the border crossing and saying, well, that was code. So the cops allege that actual plain spoken language is code for something else. And then there was never any evidence of it, right? So, like, and then we have to zoom out a little bit too. So if you watch the Public Order Emergency Commission and then read the 2,000-page final report from Justice Rouleau, he said that, like, he only begrudgingly sort of gave Trudeau, you know, okay, he was within his rights to invoke the Emergency Measures Act based on what he had heard about what was happening at Coutts. But what he had heard about what was happening at Coutts is actually bullshit. So the entire invocation of the Emergencies Act rests on these four guys being guilty, right? So if they're not guilty, if everything that was said about them is baloney, and if all the evidence presented about them was fabricated or like a spun tale, that brings into question Trudeau, right? And it's very difficult to get the government to admit that they'd done something wrong, especially in this day and age when, like, they don't respond to democratic protests. They don't respond to, like, the needs of the people. They're too busy serving their World Economic Forum masters and all these extranational globalist organizations who are outside of democratic accountability, right? So, like, the government needs these guys to be guilty. So they're going to say whatever they want to say. They're going to throw whatever baloney charges at people. Whether or not it's true doesn't matter. They need the Coutts four to be guilty. The evidence and the facts be damned.
Right, because otherwise there's no justification. Because, exactly. I mean, the justification for invoking the Emergencies Act would be, like, genuine terrorism, like a genuine terrorist threat, correct?
Correct, and they don't have it. The more you dive into the evidence, the more spurious the allegations of the government become. And then when you zoom out and you realize that, like, hey, why do these guys get denied bail? Everybody in Canada gets bail. People who have been accused of murdering police officers get bail. A guy in Winnipeg who drove a Jeep into a Freedom Convoy protest and sent four people to the hospital was immediately granted bail. The Coutts four, three of those guys have no criminal record. The one guy who does is for two hits of ecstasy for possession. Ooh, yeah, big deal.
I read in the media and they said they mentioned that one of the guys had a conviction for, like, a drug felonies and assault, I think is what it said.
Yeah, I know. And so, like, and there's no flight risk. There's, like, a whole series of checks, right? That a judge will determine whether or not someone gets approved bail, and they passed all of them. But this judge in Alberta basically said, well, you know, my bosses don't really want these guys out. And given the heinous nature of the charges leveled against them, it would bring the justice system into disrepute in the eye of the public if these guys were let out. So basically, because the government doesn't want them out and because the government threw all these charges at them, they have to stay in jail without bail in order to continue supporting the government. The whole thing is like a catch-22 Kafkaesque nightmare. And these guys have now been in remand for almost 2 years, separated from their families. None of these guys has a criminal record. None of them have any history of violence, nothing. They just showed up at this protest. And again, because Trudeau needs them to be guilty and the justice system needs them to be guilty, they are being denied justice. Because if they were not in remand, they could be outside of jail telling their story, raising money to pay for lawyers to fight the government, and the government can't have that, so in jail they remain.
I'm a writer and a podcaster, which means I can't sleepwalk through life. My brain is my most important tool, so not only do I need to keep my energy up, but my mind needs to be sharp. I work for myself, which means I need to self-motivate and make sure that I can focus in order to be as productive as I can on a daily basis. Focus is something I've always struggled with. We all know how easy it is to get distracted, especially when you're trying to do a million things at once. So I can't tell you how relieved I was to find Magic Mind. It doesn't replace my beloved wake-up coffee, but I drank it a little later in the afternoon as a pick-me-up to help me stay focused and productive throughout the day. Magic Mind has these things called nootropics, which improve cognitive function, meaning they boost my attention span, ability to process and learn new information, and improve my notoriously bad memory. Lion's mane mushrooms help reduce anxiety, which is something I work hard to keep in check by living a balanced lifestyle, but of course it still pops up from time to time when I'm feeling like I'm not staying on top of my goals. It also helps reduce inflammation, and of course, the matcha in there keeps my energy levels up. If you want to give it a try as part of your daily routine, go to magicmind.com/samedrugs and use my discount code SAMEDRUGS20 to get up to 56% off of your subscription. That's magicmind.com/samedrugs, code SAMEDRUGS20. Magic Mind is also set to launch in all Sprouts markets at the beginning of January, which is great news for those of you who might not yet be ready to commit to a subscription. So do check it out. It's delicious on top of everything, and I'm so glad to have added it to my daily routine. Can we go back to what happened in Coutts, Alberta and the arrest? I mean, why was it that these four guys were targeted specifically for arrest?
That's a bit complicated, and there's a couple of different groups at play in Coutts, right? So there was like, there's sort of like the guy who was sort of organizing. So every Freedom Convoy protest site, because it was decentralized and spontaneous, people just kind of showed up and there was nobody really in charge, right? So in Ottawa, eventually, you know, Tamara Leach and Chris Barber kind of became the faces of that. And then they had some other people come to help them, like Tom Morazzo and BJ Dichter and all that. And in Coutts, the guy who sort of came to be the sort of face of Coutts was this dude named Marco Van Huygenbos. And then there was like a couple of different groups at Coutts within the convoy protest itself. And the guys who worked for Marco were sort of considered the organizers. And then the Coutts four guys who were eventually arrested were sort of considered security loosely. But like, it's hard to sort of consider these guys organized or have been part of a conspiracy, because a bunch of them didn't know each other before Coutts, right? Like, of the four guys who were arrested, Chris Carbert and Chris Lysak were the only ones who sort of really knew each other before the protest, right? Tony Oleanek only sort of showed up at the last minute because some friends of his, some business associates and friends of his decided to go. So he just kind of went at the last minute. I don't think Jerry Morin ever spent more than one day at Coutts itself. Like, him and his wife, this lady named Jacqueline Martin, who's been on my podcast and I've spoken with extensively, they never really got near Coots because the RCMP had the whole place blocked off. And there was another sort of parallel protest site at this other community called Milk River, which is where they spent most of their time. And like Jerry Morin didn't even get arrested at Coots. He got arrested on his way to work near Calgary. Like he was like a 4-hour drive away from Coots when this all went down, you know, and his entire Jerry Morin's entire participation in the Coots blockade was helping a friend of his who's this country singer that went and performed at Coots for the protesters. Like that's it. Like these guys' connection to this is extremely tenuous. And again, the government has had to like throw all these ridiculous charges at these people to make them sound like boogeymen because they've got nothing else. There's just nothing.
I mean, it's the same thing that they always do with everybody that they want to vilify. And again, I was just reading a couple of the articles that were written in the mainstream media, referenced by the Wikipedia article.
Of course.
Yeah. And, you know, they have their sources. The Canadian News tied some of these men to something called Diagolon, which I've never heard of before, but which they referred to as a neo-fascist white supremacist group that aims to accomplish its goals through violence. What's Diagolon?
So Diagolon, okay, in reality, Diagolon is the fan group of a podcaster guy from Nova Scotia named Jeremy McKenzie. And McKenzie got arrested and spent a couple months in prison in Saskatoon for charges which were later stayed. He's this Canadian Armed Forces veteran guy who's a very noisy, loud podcaster. And Diagolon is a meme. It's a meme country. It was a joke that he created about, okay, what are all of the places in North America that did not cave to the COVID insanity or only caved to it in small ways? And you look at all the states and provinces and it makes a diagonal from Alaska to Florida all the way across North America. So in his head, it became Diagolon and it was literally a joke. These other guys called the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, who are a bunch of grifters that take money from the government, turned that into a white supremacist thing because they spy on McKenzie's podcast and he makes all these jokes and whatever. I mean, I'm not here to defend Jeremy McKenzie or his opinions, but like the government literally invoked the Emergency Measures Act in part because the Canadian Anti-Hate Network said this guy and his podcast were going to overthrow the government.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And so this one flak jacket tactical vest that the cops found in Coots had a homemade Diagolon patch on it. So that means that the entire Coots protest site and everybody involved with it are somehow members of Diagolon, who, let us not forget, is a meme country that's the product of a man's imagination and a loosely affiliated group of podcast fans who laundered through a woke activist group have become an armed threat to the country that are going to overthrow the government. Right?
Hilarious.
That's how fucking retarded this is. And because this patch was on this one vest, the government went ape shit and thought that Coots, the guys at Coots, were terrorists. And again, these Canadian Anti-Hate Network guys, this woman, she's a lawyer in Toronto named Kara Massad. She did a whole expose on how all of this went down. And it like the government was looking for these boogeymen and members of RCMP and CSIS who aren't like ideologically captured, gave these intelligence reports back to the government saying, Diagolon does not meet the dictionary definition of a group. Diagolon is just a bunch of shit posters on the internet. Like there's documentation showing that intelligence people pushed back on this, but because Trudeau needed, again, this justification, they tied all of this stuff together, even though, like, what, three of the guys that are in jail, three of the Coots' four guys had never even heard of Diaglon, have no idea who Jeremy McKenzie is. And, like, the one guy happened to be a fan of McKenzie's. So being a fan of a podcast means you go to jail with no bail? Is that what Canada has been reduced to? That based on the fucking shit you listen to in your earmuffs, you get to go to jail? I mean, that's literally what our country has become. If you take in the wrong information, that basically is evidence for you to go to jail.
Yeah.
So, like, let's zoom out from, never mind the Coots guys, Diaglon, Freedom Convoy. Like, what has Canada become in 2023? Wrong think means no bail, thrown in jail, forgotten about. The media can forget about it. Like, whatever happened to notions of justice, due process, equality before the law, all of these, like, extremely important pillars of Western society, right? Mm-hmm. Western mm-hmm. civilization is built on this stuff. And under the regime of Justin Trudeau and all these CBC Canadian fucking sheep that believe him, that's all been thrown out the window, right?
I love that this is all connected to the Canadian anti-hate network, because of course I have a history. I mean, anybody in Canada who's guilty of wrong thing probably has a history with the Canadian anti-hate network.
Oh, they're oh no, I've been when this show goes live. I mean, whatever. I've written a Substack about all this stuff. I'm sure they have a dossier on me, but now it's going to get worse because I've been on your show.
Now, on top of everything, you're a TERF. I mean, they're so funny because, as you mentioned earlier, like, they're a government funded group.
Yeah, no, they
you know, directing the government as to who is the terrorist, who's guilty of hate speech, who's the danger in Canada, but, like, they're getting government grants and government funding. It doesn't make any sense. Of course, I mean, of course it doesn't make any sense.
You know what it is for me? So I've written a few things for Newsweek. One of those caught the eye of a fairly contentious lady by the name of Laura Ingraham. Think of her what you will. She invited me on her show last year to defend the Freedom Convoy, and I accepted her invitation. I was on her show for all of 5 minutes. She did most of the talking. And within 36 hours, my Twitter account got canceled. And one of my oldest best friends, someone I've known since I was 4 years old, texted me out of nowhere and said, "I don't know who you are anymore. I don't want to talk to you ever again." Like, no argumentation, no curiosity. Oh, geez, Gord, how'd you end up at Newsweek? How'd you end up on Fox News? Why are you defending the Freedom Convoy? No questions. I know. You're on Fox News. Fuck you. You're a fascist. Get out of here. Done.
Oh, I know. I know. I mean, I've been through. I'm like, tell me about it. But I mean, it's really shocking because, first of all, they're people that when they're your friends and you're like, well, you know me, you know who I am. Surely, you know, I'm not a lunatic, but also, why don't you think this through for just a minute? Because, you know, if I appeared, you know, like, I've been on all sorts of different media, and does that mean, so if I go on the CBC, am I signing on to everything that host believes or everything that the CBC believes? I hope not.
Of course not.
But if it happens on Fox, I mean, I had a similar experience when I was on Tucker's show, like, a few years ago, and I got a text from a friend that I'd known since I was 15 years old, who was like, "Really, Tucker?" And I was like, "What? Like, why?" So I can speak to hundreds of thousands of people across America who would have never heard my perspective before?
Really? No, this is the thing. Like, the whole reason, like, I understand Laura Ingraham is hated by a lot of people, and this is a risk I took. However, at that time, the media in Canada were lying their asses off about the Freedom Convoy. And, you know, somebody had to fight that. Yeah. And so one of my friends is this guy who's like the go-to guy for NPR, you know, the sort of Canadian equivalent of the CBC. And he's been on there a million times talking about the trucking industry, like just nerding out about trucking, labor market economics, just, you know, NPR stuff. NPR was looking around to speak with somebody about Freedom Convoy, and my friend suggested me. Hey, if you want to talk about the Freedom Convoy in Canada, talk to Gord. NPR never called me. NPR never ran a piece about the Freedom Convoy until March after it was over. And I come to find out sort of secondhand in the background that like NPR went and found my online stuff, saw me on Laura Ingraham, read my articles in Newsweek, and were like, we're not talking to him because I was not going to tell NPR what they wanted to hear. Right?
Yep.
So it's not for lack of trying. I mean, I'll talk to anybody. I'll talk. If CBC invited me on tomorrow, I will talk to the CBC. I mean, I hate their guts and they probably hate mine, but if they invited me on, I would talk to them. Of course. Invitation remains elusive.
And that's what you do when you're trying to get your views out, your story out, the truth out. You talk to anybody who would listen, and you know, you'll go on any media that you can, so long as you think that, you know, you'll get at least sort of fair treatment, I suppose. The Canadian, I'm laughing in my head a lot at the fact that this is connected to the Canadian. It's an activist group. It's an activist group that exists to vilify people who don't follow progressive narratives.
They're Overton window enforcers.
Yeah.
Paid for by the taxpayer. Well, maybe not us because exactly. We got out. Oh, good. How long have you been in Mexico for now?
3 years. So I left. I mean, I was going to say, like, I mean, one of the reasons that I left was, of course, because of the lockdowns, and I was miserable and I was terrified that I was going to get trapped there, and I suspected things would get worse, and they did indeed get worse. But also because of the work that I do, and because I just thought I'm not going to be able to work, like I'll be criminalized, I'll be arrested. I was already being silenced and censored and vilified and libeled by Canadian media, and I knew that Trudeau was trying to crack down even harder on what he called online hate speech and on online platforms in general. And he has, of course, done that with YouTube.
Can I boil it down? I mean, I know obviously your listeners know, but just to make sure that I'm correct in my perception of your hate speech, it's that men are men and women are women and biology is real. Is that,
the whole of it? A large part of it, I think it probably started with my opposition to this ideology that says that people can change sex through self-declaration. But then the social media, YouTube cracked down on me because I was critical of the COVID mandates and the lockdowns as well. So
yeah,
there was,
I mean, that's like I say, I've been kicked off Twitter 4 times now, and I'm not sure if it's some leftoid that works for Twitter or a spook under the employ of the Canadian government, but it's
so. Has this been still happening to you since Elon Musk took over?
Yep. I two of the times I've been removed were uncomfortably close to discussing things in public that are disadvantageous to Trudeau and the narrative at home. Right, like so. I went on Fox News 36 hours later, Twitter account canceled. I did an interview on my own podcast with this lady in Alberta named Margaret McKay, who's sort of stepped forward to be the number one advocate for these guys in coots who are all still in remand. And within 10 days of that podcast coming out, got kicked off Twitter again. And everyone keeps telling me, hey, Elon Musk, free speech guy, Alex Jones is back on now. And I'm like, maybe a certain crew of very large accounts that have got some pull, I've got back on Twitter. There's probably hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of smaller accounts that have been booted for politics or for wrong think that, you know, hey, Elon, you gotta comb through the files, bro. Come on.
Yeah, I think that I think you must be right, which is that I think some of the big accounts and people that were connected to Elon or had connections to Elon, people that could make enough noise about it, I think maybe got reinstated, and the people who he's not aware of were left behind. Do you think that's kind of what's happened?
Sure, and I sort of get it. He's the richest guy in the world. He's got a zillion things going on. He can't be paying attention to every single account on Twitter. Nobody could expect that. However, have some customer service people, like have some people comb through things, check out people's suspensions. Have
Yeah,
a have
I
like a
think
phone number people can call and make the case,
I
you know?
know, I know, I know. It's so frustrating. I mean, I've like it, if something happens to you, it's like you have no recourse. And that obviously happened to me the whole time that I was banned from Twitter for 4 years for saying that men weren't women and referring to this guy who's essentially a male predator as he.
Oh,
And
wait, was that that oh, was that
Yaniv,
that
there's
weirdo
the
in
ball
BC?
back. He was asking estheticians to wax his
Oh
balls
yes, I remember that. Is that person
constantly.
still doing the thing?
He's
Are they
still
still
kicking
around?
around. I mean,
Oof.
I think that everybody at this point knows that he's a lunatic, but he's still kicking around. And yeah, so that's why I was banned for 4 years. And every time I would appeal, which I did over and over and over again, or try to contact anyone, I would get no response, or I would get a form response. I mean, now I still, I've been back on for a year and I still can't get a subscribe button, right? Like all of the VIPs got a subscribe button and I can't get one for no apparent reason. And every time I submit a form asking why, I get a form response back just saying like, we're still working through our list of things. So I don't know what's happening in the back end there, but I think that probably there's plenty of people still in the back end at Twitter who are not
It's that sucks,
treating
and
us fairly, let's say.
yeah, that sucks, and it sucks for free speech. But I always try and temper my annoyance with this, with the fact that like these four guys have been separated from their families for 22 months now, and for simply expressing their views, their politically stated views, and they got caught up in a dragnet because of a climate of fear created by woke-tard activists like CAHN. And these fellows have been in jail, and or remand, I should say. They're not even in jail, they're in remand,
Yeah,
which
can
is like
you explain
purgatory
what
for
that
prison.
is? What's remand and why are they not in jail and why are they in
So
remand?
remand is where you go when your sort of trial is pending and they don't really have the, they can't put you in prison because you haven't been like proven guilty in court yet. And they can't put you like, because these guys have been in for so long, it's like purgatory. It's like they don't like, if you're actually a convicted felon and you're in prison, you are afforded certain rights, you are afforded certain privileges and treatment that you do not get while you're in remand. And this is part of the punishment, you know? So something I wanted to like bring up is that you've probably heard this, especially from like people, quote unquote, on the left or progressives or sort of normie liberals, is that, oh no, Pierre Poilievre and the conservatives and all these right wingers in Canada are importing Trumpism to Canada. Oh no. You know what's being imported to Canada? Lawfare. Do you know what's being imported to Canada? Judicial activism. Do you know what's being imported to Canada? Plea bargaining. These are all of the worst elements of the American judicial system and legal system. And they're being brought to Canada, but people want to think about this fantasy about Trumpism. But what's actually happening is the government is engaged in lawfare. Lawfare is this concept where the government knows it doesn't have a case or it has a difficult case. And so what they do is they just keep throwing things at people, knowing that the process is the punishment and it's difficult to fight back because of the sort of strictures of the legal system. And then they offer you a plea deal where you plead guilty to something that you're actually innocent of just to make it all go away, right? Mm-hmm. And then with the judicial activism, the Supreme Court of Canada have just used their own prerogative to just turn down charter challenges, like without even hearing the merits of a case. They've just said, no, we're just not going to hear this, right? And that's kind of like sort of what the American judicial system does, is the American Supreme Court now rules on cases which then effectively become law because Congress and the Senate can't do nothing because they're all in stalemate. And so the Supreme Court becomes like a lawmaker. And in Canada, they do that. And how they've done it is just not hearing charter challenges to like try and get us out of like stuff like COVID, right? So Canada has imported the worst of the American legal system, but the media would have you believe that the problem is that we've imported Trumpism when no such thing has actually happened, right? Which points to a pathology that's been a long-running thing in Canadian politics and the media since like before we were even born, of this like constant comparison of ourselves to the Americans, right? Mm-hmm. Either we look at them agape, oh my God, look at all their guns and they don't have healthcare and ugh. But if the Daily Show talks about Canada, oh man, that's awesome. We got noticed by them, right? So there's this sort of like bipolar pathological need to like either shit on the Americans or like we need their approval in some way. And then that gets translated into this like bogus, like, oh no, we're becoming more like Trump. But what we're actually doing is importing their legal system.
Yeah, it's really funny. That's it. Yeah, totally. I think Canadians in general just have a big chip on their shoulders about the U.S. The U.S. gets more attention than we do. They're clearly more interesting than us. And the way that they seem to be coping with it is that they pretend to hate America and they pretend to be so much better than America. We're so much smarter. We're so much more progressive. Our culture is so much better.
It's infantile. Yeah. It makes Canadians look stupid. I hate it.
I hate it too. Well, and it's bullshit. Like, you know, America is great. America is arguably the greatest country in the world. And they have freedoms and protections that Canadians don't have, that Canadians should be fighting for. And they have values that Americans are willing to fight for, that most Canadians are not willing to fight for, including free speech and their constitutional rights. The media has just pounded this in over and over and over and over again, that they've compared, of course, the convoy to January 6th, which was also bullshit. The entire narrative around January 6th is bullshit.
Well, I mean, part of the POEC, if you read the testimony from the Public Order Emergency Commission, it was shown that Marco Mendocino, then Prime Minister Trudeau's public safety minister, his underlings were in communication with various media places to set the narrative that basically that's what was happening, is Ottawa was going to see a January 6th. These people were all violent.
That's what they wanted. They wanted desperately for us to have our very own January 6th.
Trudeau was trying to meme January 6th North into reality. And the Freedom Convoy did not deliver it. They were their most best. The Freedom Convoy acted in the way that Canadians think of themselves, right? As being polite and unassuming and not violent and just kind of like, you know, hanging out and being peaceful.
We're just out here in our toques drinking a beer.
Exactly. The Freedom
Convoy. Canadian flags, eh?
Exactly. The Freedom Convoy were everything that Canadians think about themselves, but the government tried to turn us into American January 6th, quote unquote, insurrectionists, and the Freedom Convoy did not deliver. And so they had to invert reality and make it the opposite.
It's pathetic. And the people who fell for it are pathetic. It's true. I mean, I had this guy that I knew, you know, visited from Vancouver here where I am in Mexico, and was like, when I talked to him about supporting the truckers, this was last year or something, I think, he acted like I was so stupid. He acted like I was naive, and that I can't believe you fell for that. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. And I was like, are you a crazy person? Like, you think that Justin Trudeau and his Liberal Party and the government-funded media are the ones who are telling you the real truth about what's happening on the ground, about a protest that is in opposition to government mandates?
Yeah. Selective skepticism, I guess.
Ridiculous.
There's a woman who is a former writer for the Toronto Star and the National Post who I've come to know, and her name is Donna Laframboise, and she's working on this book called Thank You Truckers. And on her Substack, she drip, drip, drip little sections of her book out on the Substack, and it tells the story of the convoy from the people that were there. So in her book, she's not interviewing any of the organizers. There's not going to be like, you know, Tamara Leach or Chris Barber or the Kootz guys or anything. It's just drivers that went. And she already wrote this other book called OPA's Convoy Letters, which was about the letters that were given to Freedom Convoy drivers who are in Ottawa by all these kids and all these families. And every single one of her Substack posts is like some new beautiful picture of humanity, of like how, you know, all these people volunteered to like bring the drivers fuel or coffee or food, or paid for their trucks to get fixed, or just all these stories of all these people who were affected in some way by the mandates that came and thanked the truckers. And like, she's got a whole friggin' book about it, the actual reality of what went on, you know. And I wonder, is anyone from the CBC going to call Donna and say, hey, come talk about your book on the CBC?
Oh, I doubt it.
I doubt it.
I mean, I don't know how much longer the CBC is going to last anyway. They don't seem to be doing very well over there.
Burn it down and salt the earth where it stood.
I want to just talk a little bit more about what's going on with these guys, the Kootz Four, in prison. Well, in remand, you know, so they've been there for almost 2 years. What's their experience been like, and how does it, I want to sort of differentiate between remand and jail and talk about, you know, how they're being punished by not being offered bail, but it sounds like they're being punished and by, you know, being held in prison without any evidence of the charges laid against them. But, you know, what's their experience been like?
So they're all kept in separate locations. Jerry Morin has been kept in remand in Calgary, and he's at times been in, you know, he's been in a gang unit. So he's been hanging out with people, rapists, murderers, pretty violent folks. And because Mr. Morin is, he likes to get to know people, and he's a very affable guy, has managed to get along with all of this stuff. But like, he's kept in the same facility as the worst of the worst. Chris Carbert has started like a kind of a Bible study, and, you know, they've all sort of managed it in their own way. They had some troubles with health stuff. Tony Oleanik had like some gastrointestinal issues, and it took the better part of a year and a half for him to be able to just get probiotics because Alberta Health wouldn't let him have his probiotics. And, you know, they've dealt with all of these things. There's been periods of solitary confinement. So when they've gone to Lethbridge for pretrial, they're not allowed to be in the same unit together, right? Because they're all co-accused. And because the Lethbridge facility doesn't have accommodation, you know, a bunch of these guys have been kept in solitary. I think Jerry Morin's done over 70 days in solitary. Tony's done a bunch of days. They've all had periods of solitary confinement. you know, which by certain standards is considered a form of torture. And again, only charged. There's been no conviction. There's been no trial yet, but they're being treated in a way like certain prisoners were treated in Guantanamo Bay. And this is happening in Canada, and the media is not talking about it at all. And it just sucks. And then we have the situation again that's also Kafkaesque and ridiculous with Tamara Leach and Chris Barber, whose trial in Ottawa is currently on break for Christmas, but like it's now the longest mischief trial in Canadian history because the government's got nothing. So they keep bringing in these witnesses who already testified at POEC about how their lives were affected by trucks parked on the street because they're coming for money. You know, there's this thing called the Ottawa Citizens Coalition who are looking for some ridiculous civil suit in the amount
because of hundreds. They had to suffer honking.
They had to suffer honking and trucks on the street. Yeah. And like they're looking for hundreds of millions of dollars. And there's this sort of thing now where the actual criminal charges, the trial is now no longer about those criminal charges. The trial is now about the feelings of people in Ottawa, because if the criminal charges are actually convicted, then the civil suit goes forward and a bunch of, you know, pampered bureaucrats that live in downtown Ottawa will extract some money from the Freedom Convoy Corp, which is sort of the legal entity which represents the Ottawa protesters in the form of Chris Barber and Tamara Leach. So like, you know, totally peaceful protest, no violence except on the part of the cops, no property damage, no nothing. Yet we have this like sort of Kafkaesque nightmare trial scenario for both Tamara Leach and Chris Barber and the guys in Alberta simply because Justin Trudeau cannot tolerate dissent and our entire government is incapable of contending with the fact that maybe they got out over their skis. And so these people are going to become collateral damage to it. And Canadians are just walking along pretending like we live in some kind of free country. And that's not the case.
Yeah. So who's representing these guys and where are we in this case? You know, when is this going to progress? That might be a stupid question.
That's a good question. So there's been some issues with lawyers who maybe not doing the best job. One of them just quit. Tony Olyanik's lawyer just quit and walked away from it. And, you know, there's been some issues with fundraising, not with fundraising, but with a bunch of online personalities making an issue out of the fundraising and being narcissistic dickheads. So there's been all these extra challenges. And then there's this thing we have to consider called the Jordan Act, where, you know, the men in Coutts have not started their trials yet. They've had pretrial hearings. They're still trying to get discovery. So just like with the POEC, the government like waits till the last possible moment to drop evidence that the defense needs to form an actual defense. And that's been an ongoing problem. So there's been a lack of disclosure. And again, this all ties into what I mentioned before, where it's lawfare. The government knows that they don't have a case. So they're trying to drag it out as long as possible to try and drain the resources of everybody involved. Maybe try and get a plea out of them, try and break them. And what they're going to do is I think they're going to try and run out the clock. So under the Jordan Act, a federal court case must proceed within 30 months, right? And if it doesn't, they basically have to let the accused out, right? Mm-hmm. But in doing that, there's no closure. There's no like, you're guilty or innocent or anything. The government has to let these people walk free, and then the government can stay the charges and walk away. But then it leaves like a cloud hanging over the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there are people, I shouldn't say I think this, there are those who believe that's what the government's trying to do. They're trying to run out the clock to the Jordan Act, because basically the actual trial for the four men in Coots doesn't begin until May 2024, which is basically 2.5 years after they are arrested. Right? And again, remember, this is Canada. People accused of murdering police officers get bail, who've actually dead police officers. These guys are accused of conspiracy in a very contentious political protest, right? Like, anybody with eyes that can see realizes what's going on here.
But of course, people can't see and they aren't seeing. And that's because, as you've mentioned many times, the media really isn't covering this story. And
no, but you are, thank God.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I heard about this, thanks to you and people like Trish. There was a woman that you mentioned earlier, Margaret McKay, who basically like dropped her whole life to advocate for these guys.
Yep.
I guess what I'm wondering is, what can people do? Because I think what we're looking at is getting around the media. You know, we have to find new ways to get the word out and to advocate and to organize outside of the mainstream, outside of regular avenues, because we're shut out at every turn. We're banned from social media. We're blacklisted by the media. We're sometimes even criminalized. You know, what's Margaret doing, and what would you recommend?
So Margaret has reorganized the fundraising for the men. So there's now 4 separate Give, Send, Goes, and I'll leave the links for you, and you can share them with your listeners if you choose to donate and help with legal fees, because they're quite expensive. And something people need to consider, because the judiciary and the legal profession in Canada are highly politicized, right? Like, if you want to make it as a lawyer in a big law firm, taking on something that's politically untenable or disfavored by the regime, you know, the judge who basically prevented the men from getting bail, what do you know? Appointed by the Liberal Party and a donor to the Liberal Party. Yay! What a coincidence.
Ridiculous.
So, yeah, we, you know, over and above the media, we also have basically a corrupt system. Yeah. So Margaret has reorganized the fundraising for them. I'll send you the links if you can donate a few bucks. These guys need very high powered lawyers or people that can like get past all of the sort of, you know, social barriers to wanting to take on this case. And just keep talking about it. Share this podcast. Go listen to Trish Wood. You know, I speak about this on my Substack. The Canadian media are hiding behind this, you know, publication ban, even though the publication ban is technical and it's about specific things about the case. We can talk about all of the things that you and I have just discussed are perfectly legal to discuss in the media without repercussion from the government. You're allowed to ask, why do we have political prisoners in Canada in 2023? Why were these guys denied bail? You can ask these questions. Jordan Peterson could ask these questions. Rex Murphy could ask these questions. All these big Canadian conservative podcasts or whoever could ask these questions. The National Post. Nobody's doing it. The National Post just did a story about, you know, the fact that Chris Barber and Tamara Leach trial has carried on for a ridiculous length of time. Not once have they mentioned the guys from Coots. They can. There's nothing preventing them. There's something preventing them talking about specific minor details. But we can talk about this. Keep talking. Shame these people into allowing Canada to slide into totalitarianism. Mm-hmm. You cannot have political prisoners and call yourself a modern Western democracy. Take your pick.
Yeah. I'm with you. And I hope that people will start talking about it. I hope that more and more people find out, and I hope that people will donate to support them. And I hope that more, this is insane that this is going on. It's totally insane. The treatment of the truckers was appalling and insane and disgusting. I don't think anyone's ever going to forget about it, which is great. I don't think anyone, the whole world, it's not even just Canadians that are angry. It's like, it's Americans, you know, like even, you know, Rogan on his podcast recently mentioned it again. You know, people around the world are not going to forget what Justin Trudeau did to the truckers. He might get away with it in terms of, you know, he'll lose the next election and he'll never truly be held accountable for what he did, but nobody is going to forget what now is his legacy.
Right. No, nobody who's like a normal thinking, thoughtful, emotional person with a heart. Right. But I mean, you mentioned accountability. One of the things that's very difficult for sort of normal people like you and I is the fact that we're never going to get it. Like yeah. Trudeau is probably going to lose the next election and the Laurentian elite will find him a nice cushy job somewhere, or he'll go work for Uncle Klaus in some transnational globalist position somewhere else. And mm-hmm. he's never going to face accountability for what he's done. None mm-hmm. of the people that works for him is ever going to face accountability. You know, mm-hmm. same in many other country. You know, like New Zealand had its own version of the Freedom Convoy, and people like hung out in Wellington, and they were met with the same police force. Like, if anybody would have seen like the Maoris performing the haka in front of like the Parliament in New Zealand, like, man, what a beautiful and emotional thing to see. Same thing happened to them. You know, like mm-hmm. the problem is this is not just a Canadian problem. This is a problem around Western civilization. We have a caste of people claiming to manage and have power over society who are unresponsive to the needs of the people they're supposed to be representing. They're mm-hmm. totally disconnected. They're totally aloof, and they're totally beyond the bounds of accountability. Meanwhile, they keep yammering on about democracy while doing nothing but being anti-democratic
and yammering on about threats to democracy, and meanwhile they're the threat.
They are the threat, you know, they are the problem.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. I'm so glad that I discovered you, and I hope that we can stay in touch. Can you let people know where they can find you online? Obviously not on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So I'm
I hope that you get back on somehow.
Yeah, me too. I'm a regular working class dude. I've got two kids to feed, and I don't do very much online. I shouldn't say it's not that I don't. It's not very frequent. I write things at autonomoustruckers.substack.com. That's where you can find my podcast. There's my writing stuff, and then there's my podcast, which is called Voice of Gord. I'm Gord. This is my voice. You can find that on Spotify, Apple, all your podcatchers. I write occasionally at Newsweek, The American Conservative, Unheard. There's a bunch of different places. Type my name into your favorite search engine, Gord McGill, M-A-G-I-L-L.
I heard you on the Good Old Boys podcast recently, which I was glad to discover their podcast. That's a good one.
That's my t-shirt. Hell yeah.
I didn't even notice.
Yeah, g'day, Bog, Beef, and Merrick. No, they're great. No, the Good Old Boys are just a couple of working class young guys here in the States, and they've had some pretty amazing guests on. They've been around for a few years, and yeah, occasionally I show up there. And yeah, but the best place to find me, though, autonomoustruckers.substack.com.
Okay, perfect. And I'll link to that in the show notes as well, of course. But thank you so much for talking with me tonight. Thanks for staying up. I really appreciate it.
No, Megan, thank you. And carry on, man. Like there's a small handful of freedom fighters out there, and be that as it may, some of us are expatriated from the countries we used to live in and call home until such time that they get fixed.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still willing to go back and fight, but I just don't want to get stuck there. That's all. I'm Megan Murphy, host of The Same Drugs. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a patron on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Megan Murphy. This allows you access to special content, early access to episodes, exclusive access to full videos, and the opportunity to submit questions to select future guests ahead of interviews. Plus, you can DM me to your heart's content and I will reply. Another great way to follow and support my work is by becoming a paid subscriber on Substack at www.meganmurphy.ca. This ensures you don't miss a single episode, allows you to engage with the ever-vibrant comment section, access my periodic newsletters, and read my Substack-only articles. You can also support this podcast directly on Spotify by clicking the support button on the Same Drugs podcast page. I produce and host this podcast all by myself and rely entirely on individual donors to sustain my work. This is all me and you, the listener. If you want to keep episodes free as well as free thinking, please consider signing up on Patreon, subscribing on Substack, or donating directly to support this podcast via PayPal at paypal.me/thesamedrugs. Every little bit counts and ensures I can stay independent. Thank you so much for supporting Conversations Outside the Algorithm.